Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true. It's not worth eating if it lacks the greasy.
To Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you burst into the kitchen, you grab a plate of meatballs and a bone for wishing. All right, now, that's the tail end of my theme song, and I'm Josh Ozersky, a.k.a. Mr. Cutlets, and we're here at Roberta's on the Heritage Radio Network with the Mr. Cutlets Show. We're being sponsored today, as we were last week, by the good people of Fairway. Want to say some good things about them, but first I'd like to welcome back into the fold the long missing and much lamented Miss Stephanie Cohen.
I'm sorry I've been missing.
Stephanie
was gone for a few days.
Stephanie is my co-host and I won't say muse, but certainly a corrective.
You can say muse.
No, I don't think we're close in that way, Stephanie.
I don't inspire you?
Not in this show, I'm inspired more by like plates of spaghetti or hamburgers
or whatever.
I think
spaghetti is your muse.
Now, speaking of spaghetti, we happen to have one of the best and most talented Italian chefs in America here today, Mr. Fabio Trabocchi. Fabio, how are you?
I'm great, Josh. How are you? Nice to have me on.
Now, Fabio, for those of you who don't remember, he was a big deal in Virginia, and your restaurant, it had a numerical name that I... What was it? What was the...
Maestro.
Oh, it was Maestro.
Maestro.
Right. And because he is the master, and then he...
What number is that?
Maestro?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a number.
It was not because of the master.
Oh, no. Well, he is the master, though, and certainly a master, and he showed it at Fiamma, where he replaced Michael White and got great critical regard for the very sort of highly refined and upscale Italian cooking that he did there. And he most recently was at the Four Seasons for a little bit. That hasn't worked out. But Fabio is a great chef, and as a person that loves to eat spaghetti, will follow him in whatever restaurant that he's cooking in.
Thank you.
So that's something I just wanted to say on your...
I feel I have to go cooking now. You tell me so many nice things about me.
If you did.
I wish
he
would too. Now, Fabio, I was telling Steffi... Steffi?
Yes, Joshy.
Oh, and by the way, we also have... Our guest for the next show happens to be sitting here now drinking a Diet Coke, Franklin Becker... of Abe and Arthur's restaurant, and formerly Brasserie and Capital and so forth. Another member of the Master Chef fraternity and a good egg all around. But what, Franklin, you may want to chime in on this. Stephanie, you've heard me talk a lot on the show about Italian is become the sort of the lingua franca of dining, at least in New York.
Well, yeah, you say a lot of the new big restaurants are... Italian restaurants these days.
They're they're not all big, but even the ones that are not technically Italian restaurants, like we had Marco on last week, Hearth is not technically an Italian restaurant, but it might as well be an Italian restaurant. Same with Kraft might as well be an Italian restaurant.
Kraft, really? Why do you say that?
Well, now,
I think everybody's kind of Italian at heart though, Josh. I mean, if you think about it, if you think about Italian cooking, it's simple. And if you think about the recession that we're pulling out of right now, you know, people are looking for that comfort. So the reason why Italian food's all of a sudden replacing the French restaurants as the most popular is because there's a comforting feel to it. And what Fabio does and what Michael does and Marco does is they do it to the highest level.
Right. And would you say that is accurate, Fabio?
I think it's very accurate. I think there is a fallback in Italian and, you know, the comforting side of it and the fact that it is simple, as they say, yet, you know, it's all about ingredients. And everybody can feel their heart back into it. And whether the interpretation is very high-end or it's not so high-end or it's more mainstream, it really doesn't matter. There is a sense of falling back in those Italian cooking as a way to, you know, get through whatever we're going through in the recession we're living in.
But that's not true of, I mean, the kind of Italian cooking that you're especially well known for is an especially exalted form. Mm-hmm. I mean, like just the, but I'm that's one thing. Stephanie, did you ever eat in Fiamma? Didn't I bring you in one time to Fiamma?
One time we did go there.
Do you remember what it was like?
Yeah, vaguely.
Well,
remind me.
Well, what it was like was it was there was a lot of elements. It was exciting. It was like it had your spaghetti elements and so forth, your familiar spaghetti-like elements. But then you'd also have like uni or crayfish. I mean, there'd be all these different things. And I would like, Fabio, if you would talk a little bit about, like, you know, how do you do, I mean, you know, not just simple comfort food, but have that be the basis of something else that's much more, you know, whatever.
Well, you know, we have to go back a little bit to Italian cooking history and so forth, and as far as restaurants in Italy itself and all that. I think there has been a generation out of Gualtiero Marchesi, the first ever three Michelin star Italian chef in Italy, that has became the professionals in the kitchen, where before restaurants, there were always family operations in Italy itself. So when, you know, the professional took the place of the let's call it the family-run operation, that it became more distinguished. And then we start to look out of our borders and how other people do things and look at restaurants as a professional way for a chef to, kind of produce a voice of his knowledge of Italian cooking and also his creativism and his willing to create something different within being based in the Italian ground. That's really what it is. I think when you talk about Italian cooking, there is Italian cooking for every day. There is Italian cooking for special occasion. And there is an Italian cooking that has an Italian roots, yet as interpretation of one soul or one man or one spirit that has different forms. So that's when it gets more of a fine dining Italian cooking. I think in any aspect of this, the only thing that has to be sincere is the true respect of the original traditions of certain dishes. Then there is a different interpretation of it, that's fine. But you know, Italian cooking has never been codified. We never put it on the book how things are supposed to be.
Which French cooking was codified.
French cooking was codified. But Italian cooking in Italy, if I make tortellini where I come from, there could be the same name, same recipe, completely different within 2 miles down the street. And the funny part is that we will tell each other that the version that I do is good and the other guy's version is wrong.
the other great chef, Fabio, I think, that maybe started making things a little bit more refined in Italy, Heinz Beck.
Yeah.
I mean,
and he's not Italian.
And he's not Italian, he's not right? Italian. He's German.
Yeah.
Well, here's my question. You know that there's like it's like the there is three brains in the this is not Stephanie, this may be too complicated. I should maybe cut straight through. I had a kind of a thought.
No, I want to hear about the three brains.
Well, there's
brains.
Three brains mm-hmm. in your head.
Oh.
And cuz the way evolution works is it can't start from scratch. You just has to rejigger and retrofit everything that's already there.
Okay.
So there's like the basic reptile brain,
mm-hmm.
and then there's the midbrain, which is like the animal brain, and then there's the exalted third godlike cerebral cortex where the human elements live.
Okay.
But they're all piled one on top of another.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm wondering is if...
Do you use all three? Are you?
I only I need to get some reptile brain going.
I think you have that one going strong.
I was
going
to say the same thing.
Maybe the upper part is something is wrong.
But your point is?
My point is that Italian cooking may be analogous to that, in that the different levels of refinement and complexity in Italian cooking may not be three separate things, but like Fabio is saying, one is built on top of another, which is built on top of another. So, like, for example, when you make a spaghetti, even if it's like you're cooking on a 3 or 4 star Michelin level, well, there's only 3 stars in the Michelin level, but you're still going to make spaghetti the same way like that they would make spaghetti in the little mom and pop, Enoteca, right? I mean, that level stays the same.
Or you respect that and then maybe add your own twist to it. because there's so much of Italian cooking out there that somehow it has to end up to be original. You know, that, you know,
even look, even the basics making the pasta.
The basic has to be true to its origin. However, I think if you can bring it up to another level, adapting a twist or implementing a different technique that only makes it better, then it's okay. Then it's fine. I mean, let's face it, the beauty of Italian cooking is its own creativity. You can take three ingredients and have Italian cooking, and you can take one ingredient and have Italian cooking yet. In a very honest opinion, is that the fact that it's never been codified is probably the beauty of itself.
Well,
I agree wholeheartedly with that statement, because if you take pasta, yes. If you take pasta, for example, I mean, at the end of the day, it's eggs. You know, there's flour. Some people put salt. Some people put oil. Some people use water. Some people use wine. You know, it's completely, you know, but at the end of the day, you could put a little white wine in.
All right, we're going into deep waters now. I think we should take a break and come back on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
I'd kick it in the head when he was 25. Speed jive, don't wanna stay alive when you're 25. And when you're stealing clothes from Marks and Sparks, and Freddy's got spots from ripping up the stars from his face, funky little boat race. The television man is crazy, Sam with juvenile delinquent Rex. It's a real mean team, but we can love. Oh, yes.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky, and we're here at the Mr. Cutlets Show in Roberta's wonderful restaurant and pizzeria in Bushwick, where they lives fried chicken from Carolyn Bain and other things, guanciale, calzones, and so forth. I'm here with Stephanie. We're here, by the way, courtesy of Fairway, the best food retail market going, in my book. I know that you know that I think that too, Steffi.
I know that you think that. I know they're not just a sponsor to you.
To me, they're the source of my olive oils and all. When I buy retail meat as a civilian, that's where I buy
and
it.
And I think probably when you fall asleep sometimes, that's the last thought that flickers in your brain.
That's not quite the last, but it's certainly it's
one of them.
One of the last. We brought up a deep point here, Steffi. Fabio was talking about how Fabio rejected my three brain theory of Italian gastronomy.
Did I?
Said that even the most.
It wasn't a very well thought out.
No, it wasn't.
Theory,
it wasn't by any part of my brain. But in other words, even the basic level, like the pasta, that the elevated technique and the more thoughtful or modern methodology. It's even in the first technique. It's not just taking regular spaghetti and doing something else with it. Even the making of the spaghetti.
Well, that's what I'm interested in what you were saying about it not being codified, and that's what makes it so. That's what allows it to be so brilliant and elastic. But could you explain a little more about what you mean about being codified?
I think we were talking about the invention. Look at the invention of pasta.
Okay.
How many incarnations you can have of pasta?
A million.
And then think how beautiful was the invention of pasta itself.
That's true.
Why was it so beautiful?
Well, you know, you can have one element and allow different people, different chefs to produce pasta with their own touch and style. And there is no barriers because you can really put your own twist. I think the beauty of Italian cooking rely in its simplicity. Yet simplicity sometimes in an execution of a simple dish is the most difficult thing to do.
That's right. That's absolutely true. I think we can all agree with that.
Absolutely.
That's why when the cooks test a cook, like if you want to go and be a cook for a good restaurant, and I'm sure maybe you guys see this. A lot of times the cook has you cook an egg or a piece of chicken or something. I mean, Puant always used to have his cooks make an egg.
Yeah. But by not having it have established, you know, strictures, will you explain why that is?
Well,
why that's made it what it is?
You know, I see if we go back to Italian cooking, I think the fact that it's not being codified, what I was trying to say is its own beauty, because there is not, you know, you can use your imagination. You can live in a certain areas in the world and use two ingredients that are originally of that area and make a great dish that has an Italian soul into it.
Whereas the French, there are certain rules you have to follow.
Well, there is more rules because their cooking is being codified.
Okay.
And then to some extent, they've been more on the forefront of international cuisine. Where Italian, we've always been, you know, the Italian cooking.
Right.
French, I always used to make a joke, and I respect all my French colleagues out there, by the way. And I never worked in France. I never worked under a French chef. But I think sometimes it's interesting to know that a French chef can make ravioli and still be French. An Italian chef can cook foie gras. It's not that French anymore. Yet foie gras was raised by the Egyptians. And because of our, during the Roman Empire, because of our relationship with Egypt and all the story, which I'm not going to go into, also Romans, they had foie gras.
Right.
And the pairing with figs and foie gras is on the cookbooks of Apicius. We're going back of thousands of years ago. You know? So wasn't that Italian? I don't know.
Oh my gosh, he's taking a claim to foie gras right here.
Well,
and now
it's true they did.
The
I wish someone would make one of those. If you read Apicius is a classical Roman source on the first cookbook, the first book about cooking. I guess it's about the second century AD
or
something.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
And they had the things they have in those books. They have, like, I would love to eat. There's one where they make a big roast, like a hog or something, and then they strike it with a sword and larks fly out of it. You know, very ceremonial dishes like that.
I don't remember that.
I think we should recreate a dish from or a meal from the cookbook.
By the way, we should mention also, Stephanie.
What?
That we have a guest in the studio besides our two chefs.
A secret guest.
A secret guest. And
he's a cute kid, too.
Cute kid. We have one of the handsomest boys in town, Mr. Luca Trabocchi. Luca, you want to say hello?
Hello.
This is Fabio's young son, who will carry the tradition of something or other into the future.
Luca, what's your favorite dish that your dad makes?
But well, that will be pasta.
We're just talking about it.
Good answer.
But now, what about? Now, when you said you were saying before, though, Fabio, that you can make pasta better. You have techniques to take it to the next level, right? Like, what would be an example specifically of something you would do making spaghetti that you wouldn't get even at a competent, you know, Enoteca in the East Village or whatever?
Well, because everyone has his own interpretation, sometimes it could be making a dish better. Sometimes his own interpretation can make a dish not so better. And
no, but what's a specific technique that you...
Well, like when you make pasta, for example, when you have shapes pasta, pasta that has stuffing on it, you require a more amount of liquid into your pasta mix and a richer pasta dough. So what I do, for example, I do a pasta dough that has only yolks on it because you need that richness to really be able to be fold around the stuffing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's remember that in this case, pasta is an envelope for a stuffing. And really it is about the pasta, but it's also about the stuffing that goes into it. Where instead for long noodles, you need a percentage of semolina flour into your pasta dough that it will hold somehow that al dente bite that we are looking for. Those are little, you know, corrections. But I have maybe 15 recipes of pastas, and they're all pastas, but they're all adapted either for a certain dish or for a certain result that you're looking for, and or done with a certain type of flour or certain type of eggs. It really depends what dish we are doing.
Now, those are what you're talking about are your fresh pastas, correct? Mm-hmm. When you use a dried pasta, like a semolina pasta, I guess, or durum, though, dried pasta is durum wheat pasta.
Well, it also has a lot to do with, like, northern Italy, they use more fresh pastas. But then when you get down south, they really they were kind of poor. You know, like
they don't have so many Puglia. Eggs to throw around.
Right. Yeah. So like especially the Puglia region of Italy. Right. They were so poor that, you know, most of their pastas were dry. So, you know, and that's why they would use like the Orchietta because it the little hat.
You know, it's funny. I was just at E Truly. And Patty was making the orecchiettes, and they eat it with the rabbits because in Apulia they don't even have any like pigs walking around or anything. But this is an interesting parenthetical. Steffi, you have to guide me periodically here if I lose track. But you're not. But you're not.
Josh, it's hard to follow that head of yours.
I know. But I do remember what I was saying, though. Fabio, you do all those soft pastas. Now, when you do a hard pasta, do you do the same? Do you get the same pasta that they get in a crappier restaurant? Or
you always want to look for a very good brand. What you want to look for is a pasta that has been dried over a long period of time, rather than a slow period of time, where the durums, the grains are selected, where they've been pressed over bronze press, so there is a porosity on the skin of the pasta.
A porosity?
Well, it's kind of a texture that is not
porous.
It's porous. That it will help you to absorb the sauce. And actually, that type of gluten and starch will become part of the sauce itself. That's what the things that I'm looking for when you choose a dry pasta.
So what brand do you choose?
What, Sitaro?
That's one of them. There is a brand called Latini.
Oh, you gave me that.
Yeah, nope. I'll give you that.
That was so good. You know what?
What?
A lot of the chefs love the Sitaro pasta.
Yeah.
And this is the other one. What do they call the Aruki Magazzino carries it, whatever.
Or Riccio?
No, maybe it's... Anyway, this Lentini pasta, I bought it for... I liked it so much that I paid $10 for a box of it at one time. Yeah. It is... unreal, because what he's talking about are these bronze dyes.
Yeah.
The bronze gets, it's like soft metal, so it gets beat up over time.
Okay.
And there's like a million little scratches on it, like a man's wedding ring,
mm-hmm.
like who's been married for a million years.
Uh-huh.
And all those little scratches leave little scratches in the spaghetti as it comes out.
It sounds like alchemy. It sounds delicious.
And then it makes it thirsty. It comes out and gaping. They're like gaping.
For
like
the sauce.
Gaping mouths. Little scratch.
Because good pasta, you're gonna and correct me if I'm wrong, Fabio, but you're gonna cook the last couple of minutes, you're gonna cook the pasta actually in the sauce that it absorbs that flavor. Because you know, ultimately
even if you just put it in butter or oil.
Ultimately everything that you cook pasta is the meal, everything else is the condiment.
Right.
So it's just, you know, serves to support the richness of the pasta.
I was in a restaurant recently, an American restaurant, and I saw something terrible that you hate to see. I saw a plate of spaghetti with the sauce on top and white spaghetti underneath. You might as well throw it out. It's like when they, you know what that's like? It's like when they bring you toast and it has like a little square hard cube of butter.
Refrigerated.
It can never become buttered toast.
Though. Never.
Yeah.
That is mean when they do that.
All right. Well, I think we should take another break and maybe come back for another round of cogitation, percolation, and appreciation of pasta on the Mr. Cutlet Show. That's a beautiful song, huh, Stephanie?
It's on my iPod, but you put it there, and I don't know who it is.
I can't remember who it is either.
You probably Durando. Don't remember putting it there.
Oh, it's Durando.
Who said that?
Oh, Jack must have said it.
Thank you, Jack.
Nat the Engineer.
Durando, Nat the Engineer. Durando was a funk. This is interesting. Parenthetical, a funk musician who was very talented and opened for James Brown in the early 70s and stuff. But he made more money as a drug dealer and lived in Fiji. Really?
Wow.
And don't they all make more money as a drug dealer?
Well, yeah, but then they end
Can
up in county, not Fiji.
Doing anything other than drug dealing?
I don't know. Drug dealing's got quite a future in it. It's true. Now, what I thought was interesting was, Stephanie, and you'll testify that this happened, when we went to break, we saw some real chef-on-chef action.
It was beautiful.
In here. The first thing Franklin said was, you started asking a cannelloni question.
Yeah, I was going to say that...
No, you were asking a question. Just ask it as if we were still...
When you make cannelloni, you're going much more yolks in the pasta so that when you seal the pasta, you don't have to add any egg wash. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
So you're just pressing the dough together, and it's kind of, you know, it's just collapsing it under the pressure.
It's like... In a way, it's like having Play-Doh in your hands, you know, and it works.
Right.
And then the richness of the yolks translate into flavor when you're going to eat it.
Speaking of Play-Doh, did you ever take yolks, stick them in the freezer, take them out of the freezer the next day you have?
And then you do pasta with that.
And then you do pasta with that? It's like Play-Doh.
Yeah, it is in a way. It's fun. I don't know. Maybe you and I can play with that. And I think it's, I don't know. You're going to have to explain to some people if we present it in a restaurant.
Yeah.
How's that done?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I found that very edifying, Stephanie.
What do you do with the frozen yolks?
Yeah, what do you do?
You have babies later?
No, you defrost them.
Is it to sell to lesbians?
No, as soon as they go in the freezer, we have eliminated any chance for that.
There's a change in cell structure. When they go in the freezer, it really is, for lack of a better term, molecular gastronomy, which I personally don't practice, but, you know, all that often I dabble, but... basically, the yolk changes structure when it gets defrosted and comes back. It's very pliable, almost like an egg yolk would be after it's been cooked sous vide. It gets very pliable, like, and putty-like.
Like the egg in the Egg McMuffin?
No. No.
Not like that. No. All right. Let's go back to Italian cooking, and in particular, Fabio's version of it, because, like, now Fabio, I think it's clear to everybody, is really a master technician, but he also has a kind of a vision for, you know, that Stephanie, you may not be aware of this,
probably not,
but there's an ongoing status struggle. You know how, like, brunettes always complain that blondes, people say they're prettier, or like whatever it is.
Pardon me.
I mean, that's not a good example, but
you're getting yourself in trouble now.
Yeah. I mean, all right, well, like, whatever. Like, the point is,
What are you saying?
Italian restaurants never get three stars.
They have an inferiority complex to the French.
There's never been an Italian restaurant to get 4 stars from the New York Times. They're all Froggies got the 4 stars.
I do wish I was a blonde, so I do understand.
That's not true. There was one back in the 70s.
Romanissimo?
Yes, Romanissimo.
Parioli Romanissimo.
Yep.
All right. Well, we'll pretend that I knew that.
But I think Josh, if there is ever a chance that there will be a 4-star, it's now more than ever Italian.
It's now more than ever.
Who's it going to be?
Because I think that there's a lot of chefs in New York that they brought Italian cooking to, you know, a very, very high level, and successfully so. So there is 2 or 3 establishments in New York that they certainly deserve that type of attention. I would not be surprised if they get it.
Let's call it right here.
In the near future.
Josh?
Well, it'll be Michael.
It'll be Michael White.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and if Fabio was working, he would have a good shot
lucky.
At it. I mean, there's a lot of good chefs that don't... The thing is...
Well, it's one of the other. It's either Fabio or Michael that would be capable of getting that 4-star mark.
Well, you can't count Mario out entirely. And Mark Ladner.
You can't count Mario out. You can't count... I mean, listen, you know... You can't count AC out either.
I mean, but that's what I was going to bring up. AC, Stephanie, you're probably wondering who
Andrew
AC.
Andrew Carmelini.
Exactly right.
Thank you.
But AC is an example of somebody. Now, if you're going to open a restaurant in this day and age, it's much more likely that you would want to open something like Locanda Verde,
absolutely,
which has a much more simple, rustic sort of food, than the kind of composed, exalted,
but
painterly food that Michael.
Let's go back to the basic question of why Italian restaurants don't go beyond the don't rank higher.
Well, do you want my opinion or should we ask our chefs?
No, I think we should ask the chefs.
All right. Why do you think it is that they have not ranked higher historically?
Is it not seen as difficult to cook?
I think sometimes it comes down to the perception of Italian cooking.
Should
it be a 4-star restaurant or should Italian cooking, you know, it's always applied to comfort food and whatever all that means. You know, sometimes that's one issue.
In Europe, it has risen to that level with, you know, Goltero or with Heinz Beck. It has risen to that level. But in the United States, there's so many, you know, it's weird, but I guess I'm going to use the term red sauce. There's so many red sauce operations
right
here, especially in New York, that people look at it as this homey cuisine and they don't realize that there's so much more beyond.
But let's ask that seriously right here and now. Is the technique as hard as French cooking?
No, I think it's more a matter of, you know, the Italian cooking that has been brought to the United States, with all respect, is being brought over by when immigration was there. So every Italian's family was cooking what they know best, which is the countryside, homey, original Italian cooking and so forth. If you go to Italy today, there's more Michelin star than there were 10 years ago, and 10 years from now, there's going to be more Michelin star than there are today. Italian chefs that brought Italian cooking to another level. So
it's seen as like an immigrant?
That was a very good question. Very intelligent question.
Well, what would we have the answer?
Well, he's giving us the answer.
Yeah. But that has something to do with that. Question. But also the commitment of building a 4-star Italian restaurant is a big commitment from many aspects, not only financially, but also, you know, level of service that you have to match.
But I think that's what you need to touch on more than anything is, I think in general, the number of restaurants that would go towards a 3 or even a 4-star benchmark now, most investors aren't willing to take that chance anymore because
absolutely not. Yeah.
There's so much involved, whether it's the silver or the crystal or the tablecloths.
Is it worth it?
Is it worth it? Are they going to get their return?
Right.
Or is it just
ego
stroke?
How much in dollars does that extra star bring? I mean, what does that do
economically?
It's
a huge investment to put the ingredients to potentially become a 4-star restaurant.
And then how much does that bring in terms of clientele?
You bring it in clientele, but your margins are very low because you're dealing with a costly operation.
So is it even worth it to do it?
People do it. It's one of the few things.
Is it a vanity project?
No, it's not a vanity. Well, sometimes it is. But you know what it really is, Stephanie? It's a really kind of a noble undertaking because anybody could make more money selling, you know, fried rice or hamburgers,
Mexican
or something,
food, or
than they could with doing one of these restaurants. Right. But it's one of those things that people just think it's like making like museums. Like why people endow museums and build museums. It's the same thing with doing these 4-star restaurants, except they probably make about as much money as a museum, which is to say none.
You said vanity, and there is a aspect of ego or vanity that plays into it, but the reality is, you know, when you're a chef, when you're a chef of Fabio's character, you know, background, or a chef of, you know, Eric Repair or any of the other 4-star chefs out there, the bottom line is they've worked so hard throughout their career to get to that point that when they're producing, it's almost natural. That's what they're going to produce is a 4-star level.
Right. It's like you build somebody. It's like if you had trained like an athlete to do a 4-minute mile and then told them, no, you know, 4.5 minutes is plenty. All right. Now, this is so deep, Stephanie, and we have so neglected some important things like Fabio's terrific cookbook.
I want to hear about it.
Of Lamar. I am going to let's close this show.
Okay.
Start the next show. We'll have the same thing. We'll talk to Franklin a little more extensively, but let's continue this theme on the next show. Sunday at 5:00 or available via iTunes on the Mr. Cutlet Show.
Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop, with the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets.